The Brooklyn Nets follow up an embarrassing loss to the Philadelphia 76ers on Tuesday by going up to Toronto and taking home a much-needed win over a depleted Toronto Raptors team. We're going to break down Kyrie Irving's performance, the play of Ben Simmons, why the Nets really needed this one before the Thanksgiving holiday. It was a game that the Nets, you know, looked like they got strong from the start, and then turn a big third quarter into a W. Going to talk about the whole entire game, break it all down. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I am Doug Norrie, the owner, operator, DFSR.com. It's daily fantasy sports rankings.com. If you need some projections for FanDuel or DraftKings, got you covered. Really every sport. So head on over to DFSR.com for that one. Also want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Sweatblock. If you or someone you love is experiencing embarrassing sweat or odor, try Sweatblock. Save 20% with promo code Locked On at sweatblock.com. Also available on Amazon. No Adam Armbrecht on the show today, obviously. Didn't introduce him. Don't need to. He's over. He had a good opportunity to go and sit ice side at the Devils tonight. So that's where he was. Plenty of good reasons heading into the Thanksgiving break. And that's no problem because this game for the Nets, it's a pretty easy one to talk about, right? Like, I think that going into the Thanksgiving holiday, if you celebrate, I mean, if you're here in the U.S., I know we've got a bunch of Aussies and other folks out there, but if you're heading into the U.S., probably listening to this on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe if you're staying up super late, you're getting it the night before. But this was a game the Nets really needed following a really embarrassing loss to the Sixers on Tuesday. Obviously, the Sixers were without Joel Embiid, without James Harden, without Tyrese Maxey, and the Nets just couldn't get it done. They couldn't. They really had problems on and all over the court. And then you go into this Raptors game where it's funny because you get seemingly more of the same. This is a game where, well, Pascal Siakam had already been ruled out. He's hurt. But then before the game, we learned that Fred VanVleet and Scotty Barnes aren't going to sit. So it's another game where the Nets are essentially playing the B team from another NBA team. And you think to yourself, well, I mean, the scheduling luck here is pretty nice. And the Nets got to have a few examples from this over the course of this season. I tend to think this kind of thing evens out over, you know, all 82 games for all teams, but the Nets have been on the better side of some of this injury luck for opposing teams so far. But they go in and get the job done. It didn't look easy the entire time. It didn't look like they still had certain issues that we're going to get to pretty briefly or, you know, quickly here crop up for them over the course of this one. But in the end, it's 112-98. A win is a win. When we get to the end of the season, no one's going to look back and say, well, they beat that Raptors team that was playing with Malachi Flynn and, ex-Net Thaddeus Young and guys like this. They got Koloko starting, although he's started a few games for them this season. No one's going to look back and, I don't think, litigate the Raptors team like that. So a W is a W, and that is really what you want to see to get back on the winning ways. And the real story here, well, there's a couple stories for the Nets when it comes to just how this got done. But we got to start with Kyrie Irving. So I think there was some concern going into this game, and even actually maybe even partway through this game, where, and I saw some people mention this, where it's, you know, there's an idea that Kyrie Irving, you know, looks a little passive since coming back from the suspension. This is his third game back. The first one was against Memphis, goes 5 for 12, scores 14 points. Second game, obviously, against Philly. You probably wouldn't have known it. He shot 18 shots in that game and scored 23 because it didn't feel like much else was happening. Defense was obviously an issue, too, for him in that game. So you get this feeling maybe that though he's, you know, put up 30 shots going into this game, that we hadn't really seen much of him. And then the first half of this game was a little bit more of the same. It seemed like there was just sort of a taking a back seat and letting the offense go through other guys and just not getting some of that vintage Kyrie Irving stuff that we've become so used to over the years. And then the third quarter comes around. And as often happens with basketball, we sort of forget the previous thing that we were thinking and just get into the idea of, oh, Kyrie Irving looks fine. Okay, he's fixed. All good. Whatever I was thinking before about him being disengaged or maybe having some hangover here from the suspension or still feeling the after effects of what those few weeks were like for him, you know, off of the court, any feeling like that around maybe thinking that it's carried over for him coming into these few games is basically erased in the second half of this game when he goes completely off, leads a Nets charge where they put up 39 points in the third quarter. Kyrie ends with 29 points. He went 11 for 16 from the field, 5 for 8 from 3. Only got to the line twice, but this number is so freaking efficient. 29 points in 28 minutes on 16 shots. That's good for an 86% true shooting percentage. You're not going to get much better than that in terms of efficiency. It was basically, if you touched the ball and he thought about shooting or scoring, the ball went in. That's that kind of 86% in terms of a true shooting percentage is really, really, really darn efficient. So I think if you're of the mindset that, you know, that this stuff was hanging on for Kyrie, and we know that this guy, look, I don't think he gets into his head a lot, but we've seen times where it kind of turns on and turns off for him for sure. And this was a big thing. I mean, this was a national story for him, the suspension. This was a lot of time in the media with really negative attention, warranted to some degree. To a lot of a degree, I don't want to, you know, downplay the reason he was suspended at all. But if you're just looking at it from a basketball perspective, now that he's back, it would be reasonable to think that that kind of thing hangs on for a little bit. I know news cycles tend to come and go. News cycles, we kind of forget about things very quickly in this world. It's the way the world works. I mean, on a macro level, the thing that seemed like a huge deal a week before sometimes no longer seems like a huge deal. That's just the way it works. But if you think about people on an individual level, it's totally reasonable that some of that might have stuck around for Kyrie. It was even mentioned on the broadcast where he hits an and one in the third quarter on a run out between him and KD and Simmons. And he finally gets a little bit demonstrative during that. You know, you see a little bit of emotion from him. And even Ian Eagle, Sarah Kustak started to notice it too. So this isn't a thing that's just kind of coming out of nowhere. There sort of was a growing sense, I think, through the first, 10 quarters that he had played since the suspension, that maybe there was a certain passivity to his game or just not being fully engaged. Matt Brooks did a great thread over on Twitter yesterday, breaking down the Philly game and a number of just defensive lapses that Kyrie had during that game. And I'd really encourage you to go look at the thread that Matt did, because it's excellent if you just want to learn about basketball. But sometimes you can look at those things and say, hey, maybe this is a mental component for the guy. And it is, because if you're getting, you know, if there's just long lapses of sort of just nothing but mental mistakes, right, on the defensive end, you can point to it and say, maybe this is a problem. But then you get a game like this, like I said, 29 points, leads them to victory, easily the player of the game, only person on the team that scored over 20. No one else even scored over 15. KD ends this game with 12. So Kyrie leads the victory charge here, and you kind of, once again, as again happens with basketball and happens specifically with Kyrie often, is that you sort of erase the thought that you had before, and you move on to this idea that I think everything is going to be fine. Lesser opponent, yes. You know, B team for the Raptors, of course. So we can't do too much of a victory lap on it. But if you want to wonder if Kyrie Irving, at least for the time being, is back to playing vintage-ish Kyrie Irving basketball, I think that this game does you some favors in helping you know that. So I want to talk a little bit more about Kyrie. I want to talk about Ben Simmons. I want to talk about what's to come going forward here with the Brooklyn Nets as we head into the holiday. First, I'm going to tell you about our friends over at Bet Online. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. You can get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. Basketball, football, soccer, got the World Cup going on. Esports, it's all over there at BetOnline.com. betonline.net. If you love sports podcasts, you can find those on BetOnline as well. It's the fastest and easiest way to get that betting fix in. Head on over to the website now to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. You know, like I said before with Kyrie, I think that we can probably just move on from him. But I think the part where, you know, when you start to think about this Nets team, and it's so funny about how basketball works, because we're 24 hours away from coming on to this podcast after that Sixers loss and just sort of saying, you know, shaking our heads in disbelief about what happened. And we said during the time of that podcast that loss, while disappointing, wasn't going to change my macro feel about this team in general, right? Like I just didn't, on a game-to-game basis, I personally don't really operate that way. I kind of have general feelings around the team and what I think they are. And one single game is never going to change my mind about that. But I think what we should do is look for things that are trends over multiple games and things that have maybe sustained or not sustained. Nets have examples on both sides of the ledger for this kind of thing, for how they're playing. And I think one thing that we're seeing that's clearly sustaining now is the play of Ben Simmons. Like, Ben Simmons looks like, for all intents and purposes, looks like a totally different player than he looked even, I mean, 7 days ago or something like that. Like, it's not that long ago. I was going to say beginning of the season, but I think we can go back to like the Kings game, right? Where he looked, you know, just he was coming off some injury stuff and they get totally destroyed. So I don't think we have to go even that far back to having some in our front of our frontal lobe worries about Ben Simmons. When we're talking about how narratives can change quickly and then narratives can begin to just be a new narrative altogether, I think the Ben Simmons thing is pretty clearly turned a corner here. There's just no other way around it. You can see it through the stats. You can see it with your own eyes. I know he had a dismal fourth quarter against the Sixers with no points and no other counting stats, I don't believe. Everything else besides that has been really, really good from Simmons, basically starting in the Memphis game. Maybe it was the Portland game. It was the Portland game where it starts to look really, really good. And it has sustained. He's been playing over 30 minutes a game. They started him in Claxton again. That pairing looked fine tonight. Lesser opponent for sure. So, I mean, I think I'm going to still take a wait-and-see approach on that pairing in terms of how, you know, what the overall upside on it is. But there's no, you can't find it really a ton of faults for it tonight. They looked really good. But Simmons, just to reiterate some things that we've talked about on the podcast over the last couple games, it's just totally different. So if you think back to him at the beginning of the season, it was he'd bring it up over half court. There'd be sort of like a side-to-side action, if you can picture like these early games, side-to-side action. And then eventually after three or four dribbles, maybe foul line extended, you know, something like that, he would bring he would pick up his dribble, right? And he'd get into a DHO, and that would kind of be the end of it. He almost really never even turned to face the basket to start the season. It was a lot of side to the basket, back to the basket stuff, even, you know, well outside, outside the interior, right? Like, well outside the, even forget the restricted area. I mean, like, he was just never looking to attack any defenders. Now it's completely changed, whether it's just he's feeling better, feeling lighter, feeling more confident, whatever it is that's happened to him over these last four games. We are clearly getting back to the Ben Simmons of old. It's really not a question anymore. He is taking on defenders in space. He's trying to get to the basket not as much as possible, but I mean, at a significantly higher rate than he was at the beginning of the year. It's not a concern, like the lack of spacing for him, which is always a thing, is less of a concern now because he is actually attacking some of the space afforded to him by playing with other either scorers like KD and Kyrie, or just shooters when they have them surrounded. But, you know, if they're going to go three out or even four out, depending on the personnel that they're playing with him, like what's happening for him, just starting in the half court. In the half court, what's happening is he is, not every time, but he is taking more advantage of defensive matchups that he thinks that he either can get by in space or at least create downward pressure on the defense. Because even if he doesn't get by them, he's still got such amazing court vision that there's an idea that even if he can get into the lane with one defender backpedaling, or defender that, and then someone needs to bring help, and all of a sudden you have someone open in space. I mean, these are the ideas that the Nets need to be built on when it comes to Simmons. And we're really, really starting to see it now. Like it's a total breath of fresh air, and even little things too with him. Forget the court. I mean, forget the passing. I think we've known that's a key skill of his. We know that he's starting to attack defenders more. Also just like these little things, frankly, dunking the ball with a little more authority. Like that is, for most basketball players, I don't think we would spend too much time analyzing like a dunk or a putback from Simmons. But even at the beginning of the season, there looked to be a certain timidness around his finishes at the rim. And I don't know if that was because he was worried about his back. I don't know if it was because he was still getting his legs under him. He hadn't played basketball in a long time. That is a sort of like violent basketball action. And if you're concerned about your body at all, there's plenty of reasons to pull up and not do it. But even that is starting to look different for him now. Like he is just flushing it down with authority. And he's had multiple chances at it right now, finishing in traffic, finishing over defenders and going for the dunk rather than trying to finesse it around them. This isn't like an analytical thing at all. This is just what do your eyes tell you about the way Simmons is playing right now? And it's just very clear that he feels very, very healthy. And I think that alone is such a big change and a promising sign for the Nets season, at least just in terms of like maintaining a good regular season, to have him looking very healthy, looking incredibly engaged, looking super confident on the offensive end, reading and reacting both quickly, like quick twitch stuff, like short roll. He got out of the short roll at least like three times tonight with, awesome passes. He had the slip pass to KD on the back cut where KD kind of brought the defender. I think it was OG brought the defender kind of toward him with one step, and then Simmons just back cut him because he understands that. But that can happen when defenses have to be a little more scared of what Simmons can do. Like all of this stuff has, all of this stuff just kind of begets the next thing happening. When the defense has to worry a little bit more about what Simmons is going to do with the ball rather than just some side to side action, now all of a sudden, you're going to be more intent on denying KD the ball to start, and you're just going to overcorrect. So one little back cut, is it spell the whole season? Of course not. But these are these little things that are now building and building and building. Over his last, I had it in front of me. Over his last 120 minutes, Ben Simmons, I did this right before he checked out in the fourth. They're plus 34 in his last 120 minutes with him on the court. That comprises the last four games. And that includes the minus nine that he had in Philadelphia in his 32 minutes. So they're playing plus basketball with him on the court. They've won now three out of their last four games. Again, that seems hard to remember. When you take this loss to Philly that's so brutal, it is hard to remember that the Nets have won three out of their last four games and five out of their last seven games. I think sometimes the mood around the team can feel odd like that and doesn't feel like it totally lines up because, the Philly loss was so brutal. But this is a team that's winning more than it's losing right now. And one of the keys is the way Simmons is playing. So you have to be really encouraged. I think that that's something we should continue to see, the defensive stuff too. I want to talk about him and Claxton, that pairing here in a second, because I think what's happening for him on the offensive end is lending itself to a significantly higher upside on the defensive end, which is where if you pair him and Claxton together, that's where the Nets, as we talked about yesterday's podcast, I guess I'm so confused already, that we talked about, this idea that if they couldn't play together, that it was going to be a problem. Again, lesser team, but we saw some really, really quality minutes out of Simmons and Claxton together. Want to talk about that in a second. First, I'm going to tell you about our friends over at Sweat Block. Look, I know what this is like, folks. You're getting in front of doing a presentation. You're in front of a group of people. Maybe you're sitting around the Thanksgiving table and it's just, you know, feeling a little under the gun being around family and friends at the holidays. That is where that embarrassing sweat can crop up, but not if you have SweatBlock. SweatBlock is able to fix the problem. They're the wipes that were invented by a doctor, guaranteed to work or you don't pay. They call it the SweatBlock Dry Shirt Guarantee. If SweatBlock doesn't keep you dry, you get your money back. If you or someone you love is experiencing embarrassing sweat or odor, try SweatBlock risk-free today. You can save 20% with the promo code LOCKEDON at SweatBlock.com. You got to go try this stuff out. Look, they've solved this. You don't need to worry about the shirts anymore. You don't need to worry about if you're wearing the right colors. I've been through all these feelings. SweatBlock has solved this. 20% promo code LOCKEDON. SweatBlock.com, also available at Amazon. All right, Adam and I and other people in Nets world talked about the Simmons and Claxton combo and how the idea that this had, in terms of just shared minutes on the court, hadn't looked great this season. There were some stats that were not backing up or not helping the idea that these two guys could play together. I'm going to do a jury's out on this one because I just need to probably see more of it over the course of the season. So I don't want to take this last couple games as to be the only thing that we look at when it comes to whether it works. But what we did see tonight is that one big difference in having, and we've seen this also over the last few games from time to time, is that a key difference is, as opposed to the regular season, or excuse me, at the beginning of the season with Simmons, is that when Simmons is playing this kind of aggressive basketball and getting to the rim, and if he's just willing to be a little bit more dynamic on the offensive end, forget stretching the floor or anything like that. I just mean taking defenders into the lane or having defenders have to worry sort of about where he is because he will turn and face the basket. That actually does help Claxton a ton. It's never going to be a stretch five situation. It's never going to be a great spacing situation. But the part where Simmons at least maintains an aggression on the offensive end does help Claxton, or at least mitigates some of the issues of pairing them together on that end of the court. Again, I don't think ultimately this is, if you drew it up in a lab, with the way these guys are built and their actual skill sets, these are not usually who you'd want to pair together. That's just what it is. Basketball is a fickle thing like this. It's hard to find all your players that are going to pair perfectly together, whether it's, you know, skill set, size, speed. Like there's a reason basketball players sort of are gradient in terms of their overall skill set from 1 to 5, because you can't play a bunch of fives together and you can't play a bunch of ones together. And the reasons are different, but it exists because that's the case. The closest you can get is playing like a bunch of threes, a bunch of wings together, but then you're going to have to hope that those guys also can do other things really well on the court, like dribble or, you know, have enough size to be able to get on the glass. So there's a reason basketball is sectioned off into some positions. I mean, we're pretty team no position over here, but there's still reasons why you need to have a mix of skill sets on the court at the same time, because the other versions of it don't work. That being said, with Simmons and Claxton, what we saw tonight is when Simmons, like I said, is more aggressive, then that will open up a little bit more room for Claxton. He's able to operate more around the perimeter, which means that Claxton either can pick and roll, although they're not really doing that, or at least kind of hang in the dunker spot where he's not going to overlap with Simmons because Simmons is controlling more of the offense. So if those things are going to happen, then they can coexist for longer stretches of time on the court. I still probably, if we're thinking about overall upside, need to see it against higher quality opponents that are going to sort of know how to mitigate any of those gains they can make. But it's at least worth continuing to see how it goes. And then at the defensive end, I mean, they really wreaked havoc here. Like they, especially in the third quarter, they were everywhere. Simmons especially was jumping lanes, was really anticipating opponents, even just dribbling or what they were going to do. either for stripaways. He jumped a few passing lanes also. Like, he was in multiple places. And you could see that what was happening for him on the offensive end was really, I think, giving him energy at the defensive end, or maybe vice versa. Maybe the defensive end piece was giving him more energy at the offensive end. Whichever it is, it was another two-way performance. And I think we did see against this kind of team, like this sort of smaller and just frankly not as good Raptors team, that the defense, once it was dialed in with Claxton and Simmons and Durant to some degree, and O'Neal played a pretty nice game at the defensive end, I think they were able to give them problems. Where the Nets continue to struggle, and you know, it took 25 minutes into the podcast to get to this. This would have been what we led with had the Nets lost. Believe me, like this would have been the first 10 minutes I would have spent on these stats. But because they won the game, I think we can sort of flip around the narrative. But the problems for the Nets that have been the problems so far this season continue to be the problems. Like the offensive rebounding for the Raptors tonight, 23 offensive rebounds to 7 for the Nets, 23 offensive rebounds for a team that's made up of Thaddeus Young and Christian Koloko and OG Anunoby and Chris Boucher. I know these guys are longer. I mean, but this isn't Joel Embiid over here. I mean, these aren't like world-class centers or like massive bodies. It's borderline embarrassing how bad the Nets just get rolled on the offensive glass. It happened against Philly. It's the reason they lost against Philly. It would have been their demise here. This game, the Nets did pull away. I mean, Toronto shot terrible from three, 24%, and was in the game for a lot of this until the third quarter. And the Nets shot it okay from three, 45% overall. The reason Toronto stayed in this game, you know, even marginally, is because the second chance points, which it felt like a million. At one point, I think 17 of their 32 points were, of their first 32 points were from second chance points. And that number only grew. I mean, these numbers are so bad for Brooklyn. I don't see an immediate way to correct it outside of just, I mean, this sounds like so 101, but like boxing out an effort and timing your jumps. Like, they seem to have problems with all three of those things. And if this is going to happen against these teams that are made up of these guys I just said, or Paul Reed or Tobias Harris or DeAnthony Melton, these are the guys they played over the last couple of games. If this is going to be the problem, it's just going to keep being the problem. So the opponent offensive rebounding is a disaster. The opponent's second chance points is a disaster. The Nets turned the ball over a million times in this game. They were still able to get by with it. I mean, they had 19 turnovers. It got better. This number was going to look a lot worse. It was really bad at halftime. But they were able to sort of turn it around. Again, but this isn't like some defensive powerhouse here. Like, this was the Raptors B team at best. So I think these are continuing to be problems for the team. I think that we're probably not going to see the end of it anytime soon. The hope is that you can mitigate it with some of the other things that they do really well. I mean, they did generate 10 steals and 11 blocks in this game. So they are getting after it to some degree in these spots. But it's just really just the same thing every game. The offensive rebound is brutal to watch. It's so tough. It's so bad, actually, that you begin to sort of expect it to happen. Like, my expectation level on the Nets securing rebounds has gone so far down that it's just because we've just seen so many minutes of it this season. So, again, good news that the Nets won, or else I would have spent half the podcast talking about that. It probably means that at some other point we are going to spend half the podcast or the whole podcast talking about it, because it remains a problem. But for one night here, we don't have to, because the Nets are able to take it home against the Raptors, 112-298. They hold another team under 100 points. There's been a nice little run of that for at times. You know, they went through that run on the West Coast trip, and before that with New York and Dallas, where they were holding teams to lower scoring totals. And you would hope that a team led by Malachi Flynn and Gary Trent and OG Anunoby, you would hold them to 100 points too. And the Nets did. All right. This is going to be it for us this week. Hope everyone enjoys the Thanksgiving holiday. If you're listening, you're going to listen to this one. This will be, you know, count as Thursday and Friday's episode, just because the way the holiday is going to shake out. Really appreciate everyone that's been jumping onto the podcast. So thankful for all you out there that are coming on every day, either on YouTube or, you know, wherever you listen to the podcast, and making sure you download it, making sure you hit subscribe. All that stuff is super free, and it really, really helps us. Is that just the only and best way to help the podcast? Just click subscribe, make sure we show up every day with you guys, and we will be there to do it. And for Adam, for myself, Adam's, you know, usually coming in here with the great American poets. I once again am ill prepared with a quote, but we'll just say that we'll be back next week talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.